Okay, welcome, great friends, to March 18th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. I am your host, Joe DeCristoforo. And I do this show because I'm a great patriot, and hopefully you're listening because you're one too. Let's begin the show as we normally do with a Pledge of Allegiance. Let's everybody stand up, face the flags if we have one, put our right hands over our hearts and begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Woohoo! America! And now on to today's headlines. Guess what, friends? Today is Grover Cleveland's birthday.
Plus the legend of the Colorado Coney Island hot dog stand.
And then move on to Vietnam War news with Operation Breakfast. So, shall we? Yes, let's go. 1837, happy birthday, Grover Grove, Uncle Jumbo, Beast of Buffalo, Big Steve Cleveland, numbers 22 and 24. Stephen Grover Cleveland was born today in 1837 in Caldwell, New Jersey, as the fifth of nine children to Ann Neal and Richard Fally Cleveland, a Presbyterian minister. After moving his family to upstate New York in 1841, Richard served several congregations until his death in 1853, when young Grover was only 16. Having to leave school to support his family, he worked with his older brother at a school teaching the blind. Big Steve Grover studied law at the same school as President Fillmore, incidentally, then passed the bar in 1859 and later served as county sheriff in upstate New York. In 1881, he became mayor of Buffalo, worked to clean up corruption, and was elected governor of New York, where he earned the nickname Uncle Jumbo. During the Civil War, Big Steve Grover avoided the draft by getting a substitute to serve his place, which was not uncommon at the time. In 1884, Cleveland won the Democratic presidential nomination and faced off against Republican Senator of Maine, James Blaine. In this election, Cleveland dealt with a paternity scandal in which he would have to publicly own up to the fact that he was paying child support to a woman who claimed he was the father of her child. "Ma, ma, where's my pa? Gone to the White House, ha, ha, ha," was the slogan used against Uncle Jumbo. No Democrat had won the presidency since before the Civil War. But as it turned out, Blaine had his own share of scandals, namely buddying up with Wall Street and the railroad monopolies, and the Republican mugwumps threw their support against Blaine, and old Grove, the Beast of Buffalo, Cleveland, would barely win the election. Once in office, another nickname was given to him, Veto Man, as he continued the policies of his predecessor Chester Arthur in terms of basing political appointments of how they did their jobs rather than party affiliation. But excessive vetoes cost the Guardian president the 1888 election to Benjamin Harrison. Americans were fed up with big money and manufacturing and corruption, so Cleveland won the 1892 against Harrison, making Uncle Jumbo the only president to serve non-consecutive terms by being numbers 22 and 24. As president, Cleveland was tough on inflation, free silver, imperialism, and business subsidies for farmers and veterans. The mugwumps loved him. He blamed the nation's economic depression in the Panic of 1893 on Harrison's Sherman Silver Purchasing Act. He also sent federal troops to stop a rebellion in Illinois during the Pullman car strike, in which 150,000 workers threatened to walk off. Due to changes in Europe, Cleveland dealt with a sudden influx of tens of thousands of Irish, German, and Eastern European immigrants. Yet he turned a blind eye towards women, Native Americans, and Chinese Americans. In foreign affairs, Cleveland threatened war against Great Britain over boundary lines in Venezuela, using the Monroe Doctrine. He also got aggressive towards Germany regarding Samoa, but was not in favor of Harrison's overthrow of the Hawaiian monarch, even though Hawaii would be annexed anyway. "I am ashamed of the whole affair," said he. Meanwhile, back at the White House, Cleveland didn't care for bachelorhood and married 21-year-old Frances Folsom, the youngest first lady yet. They would have five children, three of them at the White House. One of these children was named Ruth, after which the candy bar Baby Ruth is named. He dedicated the Statue of Liberty in October 1886. Cleveland personally answered the White House phone, and he was the first president to be filmed. The footage shows him signing a bill. He had secret surgery to remove mouth cancer in 1893. Not wanting the public to know this, he had it performed on his buddy's yacht. And for those of you hardcore Grover Cleveland fans, you can see this tumor on display at the Mutter Museum in Philly.
Cleveland also had in the White House a mockingbird, several canaries, and a dog. He also vetoed around 540 votes. This would not win him a re-election in 1896, coupled with the fact that he was getting death threats due to the nation's economic woes. First Lady Frances, in fact, would have to increase security from 2 men to 27 men when she went out in public. After William McKinley won the next election, old Grover retired to Princeton with his family and often consulted with future President Teddy Roosevelt. In fact, legend has it, Teddy once brought over his young nephew Franklin to the White House while he was still president, and Grover patted a young FDR on the head and said, "I am making a strange wish for you, that you may never have to be president of the United States." Now known as the Sage of Princeton, old Grover Big Steve would be known for protecting the executive branch, keeping legislation from entering it. Francis was there at his bedside when he died at age 71 of a heart attack on June 24, 1908. As he spoke his final words, "I have tried hard to do right." Grover Cleveland also once said, "Though the people support the government should not support the people." Good stuff. A mugwump's dream indeed. Happy birthday, Grover! 2006. Colorado Coney Island hot dog stand moves yet again. Normally, I wouldn't bring up a restaurant on an American history show, but at the risk of sounding like a tour guide, you gotta check this one out. Way back in 1966, Marcus Shannon from Lakewood had this harebrained scheme to build the giant hot dog and make a restaurant after it, named for the great amusement park in New York that had been around since the 19th century. It was a 35-foot bun with painted relish and mustard. How could you go wrong? Unfortunately, like many restaurant entrepreneurs, didn't do the research and development very well, or not at all, I'm thinking, and the restaurant was financially upside down within 4 years. In 1970, the giant 18-ton hot dog slash restaurant was moved to the tiny ski lodge town of Aspen. If you've ever driven up that mountain up the 285, it's challenging enough in a snowstorm and a standard-sized car. Never mind an 18-foot hot dog. I'm hoping they did this move in the summertime. At any rate, that location worked for about another 35 years or so, until on this day in 2006. John Wallace, the owner of Denver's William Tavern, bought it and renovated it, moved it back to Bailey, and opened it for business. Like I said, normally I wouldn't bring up a restaurant on an American history show, especially since LA also boasts a giant hot dog restaurant called Tail O' the Pup. But as Americana as this is, let me just say you just can't find an elk jalapeno bratwurst just anywhere. Know what I mean?
Finally, moving on to Vietnam War news. 1969, very unpopular Operation Breakfast. What's on the menu this morning, President Nixon? How about 110,000 tons of bombs delivered by our B-52s over the neutral Cambodia? Shh, the Pentagon said this was supposed to be a secret. And it was, until the New York Times ran the article in May of 1969.
So that's all, my friends, for March 18th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. Once again, I am your host, Joseph DeCristoforo. Hope you enjoyed that. On tomorrow's program, World War I news about the 1st Aero Squadron, plus Operation Iraqi Freedom, and a little bit of March Madness tourney news. Till then, check out the website, joesdailyushistorylesson.com, and leave a message on the comment board. Let's get a dialogue going on this. I really enjoy hearing your thoughts. You can also check out some of the multiple choice quizzes on there, and follow me on Facebook and Twitter as well. So until tomorrow, thanks for being great patriotic Americans, everyone. See you then.